Blog Talk Radio.
Two stonecutters were asked what they were doing. The first one said, "I'm cutting this stone into blocks." And the second one replied, "I'm on a team that's building a synagogue."
You're listening to the Goldstein on Geld Show with financial expert Douglas Goldstein. This show is designed to give general information related to investing and finance. Neither Doug Goldstein, his guests, nor the radio station are rendering legal, tax, insurance, or specific financial advice. If you require such advice, contact a competent professional advisor. Before making any investment decisions based on what you heard during the show, please review the complete disclaimer located at www.goldsteinongeld.com. And now, here's your host, Money Maven, Doug Goldstein.
Don't worry, you still have time for 2015 to set up your goals. Hi, I'm Doug Goldstein, your host here of the Goldstein on Geld Show, and I want to stress the importance of having a goal in your investment portfolio. In the book Rich as a King, which I wrote with Susan Polgar, she's a world chess champion, we get a lot of ideas about goal setting from the game of chess. So if either you are a chess player or you're just interested in knowing how to do it, be sure you check out the book at www.richasaking.com. The reason I want to tell you this is because I had an interesting meeting with a client, a woman who, unfortunately, she became a widow recently. And we were talking about her portfolio, and she was very proud of a certain mutual fund that her husband had bought many, many years earlier, and they'd made a lot of money on it. And in our conversation, it came out that one of the very important things for her was to be able to stay in her home. She very, very much loved her home, and it wasn't obvious that she could afford it. So I suggested that if the number one goal of her financial model was to stay in her home, maybe she should consider selling the mutual fund because of the high risk. So stay tuned in just a minute. I'm going to tell you what her response was and why she was making a very poor decision, but ultimately what she came up with.
Who needs financial planning? If you fail to plan, you might as well plan to fail. Or better yet, join Money Maven Doug Goldstein, author of Building Wealth in Israel, certified financial planner, and international investment advisor. www.goldsteinongelt.com.
So I opened the show telling you about the story of this widow that I was talking to who had in her account a mutual fund, which she had had for many years. Her husband had chosen it, and they made a lot of money on it. And I told her I thought she should sell it. And she said, "Yeah, but we've made so much money." And I asked her to clarify what her main goal was, and she said that her main goal is to stay in her home as long as possible. So I gave the example, because maintaining the home costs a lot of money. I said, "What would happen if that mutual fund were to drop in value?" And she said, "I know, but we've made so much money on it." So then I printed up a chart of the mutual fund over the past 10 years. And if you've been following the market for that long, you know that in 2007, 2008, the market had a huge drop. And without showing the dates yet, I just showed her, I said, this is what the market might look like. And I showed her the huge drop when the fund itself had actually dropped about 40 or 50%. And I said, what would you do if at that point you had to move out of your home because you could no longer afford it? And she thought about it for a minute. And she said, "I know, but the fund has done so well." I said, "Yeah, but if your goal is to stay in the house, this is not the level of risk that's appropriate." I said, "Even if the fund does do well in the future, is it more important to you to have the peace of mind knowing that you will be able to stay in your home for the rest of your life? Or do you want to take the risk that maybe you'll make a lot more money and you'll be richer, and ultimately what that would mean to you would simply be leaving more money to the kids? So the risk is, on the downside, you might have to leave your home. And the plus side is you could leave a bigger inheritance to your kids. Which one is more important to you?" And when we clarified what her goal was, and she was able to say what the goal was, she was finally able to realize that she didn't need to hold on to this level of risk. And again, this had nothing to do with whether the fund was well managed or how well it had done in the past. This was a question solely about what her goals were with her money. That's why I tell people there's no silver bullet for investing. You have to find the investments that are suitable for who you are, your tolerance for risk, your stage in life, and most importantly, what are the goals you're trying to achieve. All right, let me give you a moment, an introduction. We're going to be bringing back to the Goldstein on Gelt show today in the first half of the show. In just a minute, I'll be talking to Liz Wiseman. She is a leader. She talks to leaders and executives around the world. She gave us a great interview last time. If you missed it, in fact, if you've missed any of the interviews on Goldstein on Gelt, they're all converted into videos, and you can find them on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and look up Goldstein on Gelt and Liz Wiseman if you want to see her interview or any of the other interviews we've done with Nobel Prize winners, best-selling authors, high-tech heroes. In the second half of the show, I'll be talking to Charles Wang, who is a fantastic career changer. He had been almost an overnight success in real estate, and that changed, and now he is working on a new project, and he's going to be talking to us about that in the second half of the show. Stay tuned.
Nobel Prize winners. Nobel Prize winners. Best-selling authors. Best-selling authors. World famous money managers. Money managers. Money managers. They are all on the Goldstein on Gelt show.
Okay, we are back. I'm very happy to have back on the Goldstein on Gelt show Liz Wiseman, who is the best-selling author of several books, and in fact, the newest book is called Rookie Smarts: Why Learning Beats Knowing, the New Game of Work. Liz, real pleasure to have you back.
Doug, it's absolutely a pleasure to be here.
So I'd like to actually discuss some of the issues we spoke about previously, but before we do that, and since I really wanted to we spoke last time about your book Multipliers, which was a fantastic book, and there were a number of topics which I have a feeling we're going to touch on again today, but people who didn't hear that original interview should be sure to listen to that. You can find all of the old interviews. Just go to YouTube and look up Goldstein on Gelt and Liz Wiseman, and you'll find that interview. But you wrote a new book about rookies, and really I felt when I was looking at the book that it was more about recapturing an earlier dream. Is that what you were looking to do?
You know, it really is about recapturing the state of being new at something. And, you know, the book really explores why being new and inexperienced can actually be an advantage, particularly in the current work environment where technology has allowed, you know, business cycles to spin faster, innovation cycles to spin faster, you know, which means we're becoming obsolete faster.
Mm.
And, you know, it's about how we work when we're brand new to something. And can we go back, and despite years of experience and even mastery, can we go back and work with the same level of openness and hunger and drive and dare I say, joy that we had when we were truly doing something for the first time? And, you know, how do we keep ourselves in this rookie zone?
So do rookies really feel that way, or do they sometimes just feel so overwhelmed when they walk into a big corporation they can't even imagine what they're going to do next?
You know, when I started this, and I think a lot of people go, oh, well, this is like beginner's mind. And, you know, what rookies bring, and when I say rookie, Doug, I should clarify, I don't mean someone who's young. I just mean someone who's new to something important and hard. You know, they're a newcomer to a task. You know, we often think that newcomers bring freshness and openness and enthusiasm and new ideas. And that's really not where the power comes from. We find that when we're new, the value is not that we bring new ideas. The value comes from the fact that we bring no ideas. Meaning, you know, we face this gap, this knowledge gap or this performance gap that we need to close. And really in this space, maybe it's perhaps a little bit of a darker space. We operate with a little bit of fear and paranoia. How do I get where my peers are on this? How do I accomplish something when all eyes on me? And so we start reaching out. We seek guidance. We ask for feedback. We really kind of open our minds and we open our arms, and we receive a lot of expertise and input. We find that when we're new to something, we bring in five times the level of expertise to bear on a problem than an expert does.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Because we mobilize expert networks.
It's interesting the way that you're describing that. One of the things that I've noticed, in fact, both in the world of personal finance, but even in the world of professional money managers, is
you know, one of the problems that people suffer from is often referred to as the illusion of attention. They think they're seeing something, but really they're missing what's right in front of their eyes. In fact, this was a topic I wrote about in my book, Rich as a King, which is how the wisdom of chess can be applied to investing. And I wrote that with a world chess champion. And one of the things that we looked at and she pointed out to me is so often even great chess players, and sometimes especially great chess players, will miss a piece on the board. They won't see something. And it's always very funny to say, but you're such an expert, how could you miss it? And what Susan Polgar, my co-author, pointed out is that people tend not to look at the whole board. And I think maybe what you're describing is as you move up in whatever your profession is, you get so good at something so narrow that you just kind of don't see everything going on, and therefore maybe lose the enthusiasm or the reason to even ask a question.
Absolutely, because that is part of expertise, is the ability to recognize patterns, you know, that we have enough data points and it informs our intuition. But when we recognize a pattern, we often stop seeing aberrations to that pattern. Maybe you don't see that chess piece because it's not supposed to be there. You know, that's not the move that someone was supposed to make. And so we fill in the blanks. We miss things that are there. We make up stuff. And we think we've got a handle on it, but really we're out of touch with reality. I recently saw The Theory of Everything, and there's something Stephen Hawking said that I think is apropos here. He said, the great enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It's the illusion of knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's our ignorance that actually propels us to go and find answers. And often we find that we see, newcomers see things other people don't. They're willing to take risks and go down paths that other people have learned really essentially through scar tissue, don't go there.
Right. I think one of the things you said when you said that people will say, well, I wasn't expecting to see that chess piece. I know a lot of times when there is a car accident, like a car hits a bicycle and the police come and investigate and they say, did you see the bicycle? He was right in front of you. And the drivers will often say, officer, I just didn't expect to see the bike on the road because that's not a place where bicyclists are. So people can often have all the information but not really analyze it well. We're talking with Liz Wiseman, a best-selling author. She's also she speaks around the world to executives about leadership. She's written a number of books. The most recent book, which we're talking about today, is called Rookie Smarts. And Liz, I want to dive a little bit more into maybe what overall leadership skills people can learn from your research. And there's both leadership on the corporate level, and there's also leadership in our own lives. Could you apply some of the wisdom that you picked up and some of the ideas that you're teaching to maybe how people could handle their own personal financial situation?
Well, I think there's a number of leadership implications here. Part of the power of not knowing and why people tend to do their very best work in this rookie space is not because it's a comfortable space. It's actually, we don't like it. None of us really like taking on something that we don't know how to do. It's that we don't like it, and we're so driven to close that gap. And the leadership implication in here is that the best leaders not only give people a pat on the back, they give them a push out of their comfort zone. They invite people to do things they've never done before. They don't let their team rest comfortably on what they know how to do. And they coach people into this space and then out of this space. They need, when we're in this rookie mode, we need leaders who give us space, but also give us direction. Who, when they put us up on a tightrope, they also act as a safety net. And I think it's one of the great, if not noble, responsibilities of a leader is to invite people to do things they've never done before, and to coach them through that process. I think that's where we get people's best thinking and their very best work.
So let's say that you're working in a career, and as happens to many people, you work there for many, many years, and either you suffer some sort of midlife crisis or you just get bored, frankly. What would you recommend a person in that situation do?
Well, I think, there's a message in this research, in this book, that it's really not too late to be a rookie. that it really isn't about an age. It's a state of mind. And I would invite people who have become experts, masters, very, very skilled at what they do, is to consider every now and then taking a job that you're not qualified for. You know, I actually think that the happiest and maybe the most productive professionals are those that don't linger too long in a job that they know how to do.
Right, because people always want a challenge. They're looking for something new to excite them.
Absolutely, and perhaps you know, sometimes we need a push from our colleagues, from our friends, from our advisors, rather than accolades for what we're good at. Mm-hmm. Someone who's willing to push us out there in this comfort zone. You know, I hear when I ask people to think, and you know, and for people listening, you might think about, you know, teleporting yourself, transporting yourself in your mind back to a time when you were a rookie doing something important and hard for the very first time. You know, you might think, spend just a few minutes thinking about what did you do? What did you worry about? What did you not worry about? And how did it feel?
Let's make this a little practical because we're coming near the end of our time, but I want people to walk away with something practical. And I'm a little concerned that maybe this discussion has been too theoretical. It's very unlikely, it seems to me, you're going to speak to someone in his 40s or 50s who maybe reached a stage of complacency in his job, but he's making $250,000 a year, and you're going to say, you know, why don't you give that up and see if you can get the rookie mindset? I just don't think that's a practical suggestion. However, I think that the wisdom you're bringing to the table should be applied. How could someone do that without throwing it all away?
You know, you don't have to leave your job. It's just remember what it was like when you were new to something and then go and do those things. Maybe you work in a way that you try to get fired, you know, and I don't mean that you actually try to get fired, but you say, what kinds of things would I do if I weren't worried about holding on to my job? And then go and build organization support for it. Maybe you swap jobs with a colleague for a day. You know what? You do my job, I'll do yours just for a day. To force you to ask new questions and to think new things. Maybe you sign up for a broader role, or you take the opportunity to lead a project you've never led, or take all of your expertise and maybe point it toward a different domain or a different industry. We actually found that the highest performing rookies were executives who used all of their leadership skills and wisdom and then just applied it to a new part of the business.
Well, I think that sounds like a smart one. I like what you said also about switching jobs. And one thing I'd like to suggest, it sounds like it might follow very well, is because it may not always be practical to that, you can still reignite the fire by volunteering outside of work. You know, something else you're going to do where you can bring all of your wisdom to a brand new project, which surely in your town there's something that could desperately use your assistance and experience.
Absolutely. I think if we all have some facet of our life where we're doing something we've never done before, and maybe even something that scares us just a little bit, I think it's going to bring out our best, and that energy and enthusiasm will not just apply to that task at hand. I think we'll see that across our current job, our relationships, because it's not only where people do their best work, it's where they find their greatest satisfaction.
That is a fantastic point. I think that the bottom line here is that if you find yourself in a position where maybe you're not so satisfied, you don't feel challenged because maybe you've achieved the success that you wanted to achieve, and you kind of have to reset yourself, it might be a great idea to pick up a copy of Liz's new book. Liz, we are just about out of time now. So in the last few seconds, tell people, how can they follow you, follow your work, and get a copy of the book?
Well, you can learn more about the book at rookiesmarts.com. We've got a fun little quiz on there. Are you in the learning zone? And, you know, it'll give you a sense of, you know, how comfortable you are if you're in performing or if you're in the learning zone. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Liz Wiseman, or you can check us out at thewisemangroup.com.
All right, and we will put links to all of that at the show notes of today's show at goldsteinongelt.com. Liz, thanks so much for coming back.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for the conversation.
Got a question about how you should handle your investments? Email Money Maven Doug Goldstein at doug@profile-financial.com. Then pay attention to your listener letter on Goldstein on Gelt at www.goldsteinongelt.com. Names and details will be changed to protect your privacy.
In the beginning of the show, I spoke to you about this widow that I had spoken with, whose husband many years earlier had bought a mutual fund, and she was very happy because it had made a lot of money. And we spoke about whether she should hold on to it and continue to maintain that level of risk in her portfolio, which would potentially jeopardize the possibility that she would be able to remain in her home. If the fund were to go down in value, if the market were to crash, it's likely that she would have to leave her residence. Whereas if she changed into a different type of investment, I felt the odds were much higher that she could feel confident that she would be able to stay in her residence. The funny thing to me was when we started talking about other possibilities like bonds or bond funds or CDs, all of a sudden she started asking about the risk. And so I said to her, listen, we're going from a very high-risk investment to a lower-risk investment, not a zero-risk investment, but a lower-risk investment. And she spent a huge amount of time focusing on the risk and didn't like it because it had the risk. And then I began to realize that the reason that she didn't see the two risks as the same was that she was simply looking at the overall performance of this mutual fund that she had, and she saw that it made money. She didn't appreciate the fact that the making money was fraught with risk over the decades that she held with the funds. So now when she's considering switching, by the way, I think it's very reasonable to ask about the risks, but she was going to something new where all of a sudden she didn't see or she didn't understand the risks because she had never made money on this. So I think it's important that when you are changing your portfolio, ask the questions about the risks. But if you're lowering the risk and going in the correct risk direction for your situation, that's the direction you want to move. If it's appropriate to have zero risk in your portfolio, and sometimes it is the case for people, then you have to be talking about money market funds and short-term CDs. But there is always a balance, I think, where you can develop a reasonable portfolio for your situation. All right, stay tuned for part two. I'll be bringing on Chuck Wang, who is a former real estate player and now is starting a fantastic project called Inspired Works. I'm your host, Doug Goldstein. Thanks so much for joining me. I'll see you in just a minute.
You're listening to Money Maven Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Gelt Show. Stay tuned for the second half of the show right after the break.